meeting of Ashland Board. So first on the agenda would be approval of minutes of last month.
Make a motion to approve them as written, unless anyone has an amendment.
A second.
Okay, all those in favor by show of hands or an aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. And Counselor Steve, good to see you. Do you have a report for us?
Well, I do have a report, actually. Nice to see you folks. Who would have thought that a year ago this time we would still be visiting with each other on screen? We all thought that 2020 was behind us, but 2021 better get with the program if it's going to be any better than 2020. So let's hope for the best. So to recap, over the last 4 months, we have seen some folks leave. Dave Lohman, city attorney, Melanie Purcell, the finance director, and very recently, a big loss, Elizabeth Taylor, who is the administrative assistant directly to the city manager. Her last day is tomorrow. And of course, Adam Hanks, the city manager. Big turnover. We are in a vigorous recruitment process, spearheaded by our interim city manager, Gary Milliman. Gary's been on board for about a month. He is doing a reasonably good job given the task that he has, and him coming to an understanding of how complex, which he's made clear to us, how complex a city of 20,000 like Ashland truly is to run, much more complex than maybe he thought, and certainly more complex than some of the cities that he has headed up over the years. But he's able, he's careful. This isn't his first rodeo, and it's not the first time he's had to deal with a, shall we say, a diverse city council. And certainly he is dealing with a active citizenry that is unusual. So, he is also a very able recruiter. In fact, he has done some part-time work as a recruiter, and he has placed people all up and down Oregon. So he is really going to be very helpful in us trying to fill those three positions, which we hope to do within the next 6 months. So the biggest issue coming on the pike, and probably the only one I'm going to talk about very briefly here, is the budget. You probably get tired of hearing about it. A lot of folks, myself included, before I got involved in it, the eyes have a tendency to kind of glaze over a little bit when somebody mentions budget, because it's, you know, not a lot of folks' bailiwick. Then when you start talking about the different funds and enterprise funds and general fund and this and that's and that, it, you know, kind of becomes this maze of incomprehensibility to most folks. But I'm going to do my best to really cut to the chase here in about a 30 second. Here is where we are and why we're in trouble. The general fund is the main problem. It is the problem. Water, wastewater, electric, those are called enterprise funds. They are funded by ratepayers. They are funded in other ways, system development charges and so on. They are reasonably healthy. The general fund, which funds police, fire, community development, which is planning, central services, and wait for it, parks. And therein lies the problem.
Wow.
Over the last 10 years, we have seen PERS, health insurance, and regular liability insurance costs dramatically increase to the tune of 6, 7, 8% per year. And we have not seen a rise in tax collections simply because of limitations on your property tax bill at 3% a year. So the one has slowly outstripped the other, and we have enough for the next 2 years to reasonably fund, not great, but to adequately fund all the things that are in the general fund. But after that, there is flat, not enough money. And you know, the kind of money we're not talking about is like laying off another worker or not using colored paper in the printer or reducing somebody's car allowance or things like that. Those are not the things we're talking about. We're talking like millions of dollars. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. It's a thing that we kind of dance around. It's kind of the rhinoceros in the room. We need more money. It's that simple. How we do that is the issue coming down the pike. So in a nutshell, if you have had a chance, great. If you have not had a chance, please look at the Mail Tribune website. And even if you're not a subscriber, you get some free ones. Please look at Julian Bell, who's a parks commissioner, wrote a wonderful, straightforward, clear, non-partisan, non-blaming editorial on why we are where we are and where parks is relative to the general fund. It's very, very excellent article, but it's in the Mail Tribune, and I believe it was Sunday, but one of the ones, Julian Bell, a parks commissioner, Dr. Bell, and very informative. I wish every citizen would read it because it really outlines what we're up against. So anyway, in a nutshell, thank you so much, Tree Commission, for your steadfast work. I apologize for not being in attendance here the last several times, but I'm going to do my best to be back, and I applaud your work and carry on. Anybody has any short questions, we could take that, but I don't want to take up too much meeting time, but I'm happy to respond.
Is there any information online about this other than the Medford Mail Tribune article that you're talking about?
That's a good question. Unless somebody wants to dive into the budget, which you certainly don't want to. Aaron, I don't know if there's a synopsis. There's a lot of back and forth with City Council. There is a city source that's put out. That's a good question. Let me cogitate on that one a little bit. As far as something that citizens, you know, can see that crystallizes the issue. I think that's a good point, because not everybody gets the Mail Tribune or the Daily Tidings, particularly the most recent iteration has gone a little sideways, in my opinion. And that they're seeing less and less subscribers, and so it does not become a broadly useful communication tool anymore. But anyway, thanks, Eric. That's a good question.
Okay. Thank you,
Stephen. I have a question, and I don't expect you or want you to go into too much detail about it. Kind of a yes, no, maybe answer. Do you feel like the council is functioning well enough to be looking after business at this point? And I'm referring to recent kind of bumpiness that's been going on.
Thank you for that question. I think that we have found a path forward. I think the bumpiness was a little bit of a training ground for some folks on both ends of the spectrum. I think we're making an extra special effort to shall we say, get along. I think it's a little give and take on both sides. We'll see how it goes. One of the issues, in my opinion, is that there is definitely some different world views on the council relative to the function of government, the fabric of this town, and what it might mean to defund some things and to change it. And there's really a different perspectives on the council that in some cases are not helpful to coming together for compromise solutions. But we're working on it, and that's a good question. But I would hope that the I like your term, bumpiness.
Yeah,
I would hope the bumpiness smooths out, and I will certainly make every effort to smooth that road.
One of the other questions I have, which will be relevant to our discussion here tonight in terms of funding, is the there's a position that's currently vacant and in the fire department. There, as a member of CERT, it was the CERT supervisor, but it is also they're combining the position with the weed control officer, for lack of a better, invasive species coordinator for the fire department. Do you have any word on the funding for that and if that position is going to be fully funded in the future?
I do not. I do know that presently the fire department is underfunded. I do know presently that it's a deep concern. In fact, our next council study session is on that very issue, is police and fire. There is some serious position shortfalls in the fire department right now, and they've had some retirements, they've had some people out sick, they've had some people move away, and it's difficult to fill some of those positions right now. So the search coordinator certainly is a position that I'm not aware of exactly how they're going to fill that, but I also know that there are regular firefighter positions that are going vacant right now, and it's putting a lot of pressure on two things. It's putting a lot of pressure on the actual manpower and sustainability, just from a morale and a health standpoint, firefighters, but it also puts enormous pressure on budget, because firefighter overtime has always been a sore spot relative to the budget, and you can imagine what the overtime must be when you have the shortfalls. But that's a good question, and it's certainly a thing that we are keenly aware of, and but that's I hope to have some clarification for that. Hope we have some clarification for that in the next month.
And if I can just put in 2 cents for CERT, the huge amount of resources that has been poured into CERT over the last several years in terms of preparedness for disaster, earthquake, or assistance with things like Almeda. It would be a real shame to see that program fall apart from lack of leadership. And just my view from the inside is that is a real risk. And just so much money has been poured into it. I would hate to see it fall apart. So much training, so many resources. So right. Just 2 cents worth, please do your best to obviously cover those fire positions. But the CERT coordinator is not a trivial position, and we will definitely see the lack of that if disaster strikes. And I know it's hard to budget for that stuff when you've got things on your table right now, but it would be such a waste of money already spent.
Right. Well, it's my understanding, having talked to Chief Sartain directly about this, that there is a reorganization going on, and that is very high on his list, not to have the search coordinator be shoved under the rug or rolled into a third position, a tripartite position with somebody else. He's keenly aware of it, and the community is, and the community has certainly voiced the concerns that you concern, that you have voiced tonight, and I hear it, and they hear it too, for sure.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. It's good to see you.
Sure, it's good to be here. I'm going to hear about Tree of Heaven.
Do you, though?
Yeah. Maybe I don't.
In your backyard, I imagine. Peter, Parks and Rec report, please.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Just a couple of quick things. We've resurfaced and lined the Lithia Park tennis courts as dedicated pickleball courts now, just waiting on the surface to finish curing and installation of the nets and such. So that's been popular for some time now with the pickleball crowd. So that should be good for that. The Japanese Garden had a large concrete pour this week. And if you go by there, you can really see some of the waterways and ponds and such are shaping up now. It's starting to look a little bit more like something. Still has a long way to go, but it's always interesting to check that out. And one other thing we did down at Ashland Pond, we did some work on the infill channel, which was clogged with debris, and there's a small stream going into that, there's not much to it now, but when we do get some rain, hopefully before too long, it should aid in the refilling of that. It's very low at this time, as I think Kat pointed out recently. So we're hoping to get that back soon.
Question about that pond, Peter. While it's so low, it would be a great opportunity to have a volunteer group build that little island for the bird nesting. I'm a volunteer with the parks. I would be happy to kind of do a little extra footwork to work with Suleiman to try and get a work party together to, if there's some of those big trees that are going to come down, to somehow get some heavy equipment in there and build something there, so we don't have so much conflict between bird and dog and fox and cat. We've had some beautiful nesting down there this season, and the birds are under a lot of strain. So I'd love to see a little island pop up in the middle of that pond, if it's possible.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And happy to work on it.
Thanks. I'll bring that up. I also, along those lines, as many of you know, the outflow for the sewage treatment plant is being rerouted to go near Ashland Pond. I think it will be drained for that sometime over the winter, I believe. So that might be another opportunity to do some work in there. But
someone has destroyed all of the little wooden sticks that you guys put up. Just FYI, someone had marked out the route for that.
Oh, yeah.
And someone's gone through and just busted them and pulled them out and chucked them on the ground. So,
yeah, all too common. But
yeah,
we'll try to get those shored up. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stephen.
Hey, Peter, can you speak to the large red oak that came down? Just give us a little I don't know, background on that and your thoughts on it and whatever happened to the wood.
The wood, we've got some big pieces, at least 8 feet long, that we're just saving at this point, and hoping to get some of that milled. And a lot of it, the smaller wood, has been cut into firewood, donated to the Jackson County Fuel Committee. And as far as it was a surprise, I think, to just about everyone that the way that went down, you know, some thoughts on that were possibly growing in a lawn all these years, an irrigated lawn that had a shallower root system than it might have in another situation. Did not have root rot like the other oaks, the black oaks that have come down recently. Seemed like it got to that size where it was heavy and the right gust of wind came through that day. And I was astonished to see that. It's been up. I was planted in the 30s or 40s, I believe I heard. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think the only way to mitigate that might be, or to try to avoid that happening in the future, is maybe not have the lawn around it like that. Maybe keep a mulched bed that's not watered like a lawn there, to encourage deeper rooting.
But, okay, thanks. I just wanted to check in on that one. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else for Peter? Thank you.
That's it for me. Thanks.
Thanks. Aaron, anything new on your end?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, I would just remark that in my haste to put the agenda together, I clearly didn't include public comment. Peter Finkel is in attendance, and I know he wanted to speak at public comment. So if we could please, when we're done with my last report, if we could invite him to do public comment, that'd be great. Two things that I have both involve a little bit of screen sharing. I was working with GIS to get a system in place that might make tree nomination easier for Tree of the Year, because we are pretty quickly getting to that time of year. So this is online. There's a short URL. I believe it's gis.ashland.or.us/toy2021. I'll send the link out. But this will allow people to include their name. The email and phone number are optional. I didn't want to scare people away by requiring their contact information. We do require the address, and then it will geolocate on the map where they want. If they don't do this, that's fine, because we'll have the address here required. They're able to put in a description, an owner if known, and then if they're on a mobile phone, they can click here and upload a photo. If they're on a desktop machine like I am, they can select a file from their desktop. I just thought that this was going to be a opportunity for us to promote it easier. You know, we got very little traction last year. In the past, we've done, you know, the forms that I've handed out. Obviously, in the face of COVID, that was a real problem. We didn't get as much input. This was used previously in the year 2015, apparently, and it wasn't promoted very well, and they only got very few submissions. I think it's worth giving it a shot again, and so with your guys' permission, I would like to get this promoted in the next couple of weeks and get it put out there. So that was the one item. The other item has to do with a tree that came down at 132 Vanesse. Kat, this is the one that you called me about. And I know that when you saw the tree being cut up, that it may have already been significantly along the way. Apparently, this was damage that had happened from a wind event the night before. That's basically showing the part that came down. You can see how much split away. And this was what was still standing, and that's looking at it from the opposite angle. And again, and I discussed this extensively with the property owner after code enforcement had them put in touch with me. I reviewed it with senior staff. The property owner, through the property management company, has agreed to plant mitigation trees. Typically, when there's a violation, you know, the whole purpose of having someone do a permitting after the fact is to ensure mitigation. And frankly, this would have been a legit emergency tree removal if they had called us. And so the property management company was acting in good faith. They understand that even if there is an emergency removal to get in touch with us, I was really glad that they had these photos. But that is what happened and the disposition of it. And that is all I have for the group.
Thanks for following up on that, Aaron. I hadn't seen the tree from that angle, and I totally agree. I'm still glad that they're now made aware that they need to talk about tree removal beforehand. And also, thanks for putting that Tree of the Year thing together. That's awesome. That's a great link.
That thanks goes to the GIS department. Yeah. And but yes, I will get that link out, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Do we need to have that as an official discussion?
I don't think so.
Your support? Give a thumbs up.
Yeah, if everyone's got a thumbs up, yeah.
Awesome. Great. Okay, well, I think it's normally, the public, open to the public comment period. So, Peter, welcome. You've been doing some neat stuff as well around Tree of the Year, right?
Okay, yes. Great to hear all of you and see you. First, I just have four quick things to say. The first one is thank you, Aaron, for the online Tree of the Year nomination, getting that process going. because I want to work with you on promoting nominations and votes. My goal is like 10 times as many votes as we've ever had. So we'll see if we can pull that off. But I did, you know, I published my, so it's number two, I published my first Tree of the Year article, which was the 1988 Tree of the Year, the Monterey Cypress by Briscoe School. And that was on my website on August 21st. And then it was in the Mail Tribune Ashland edition on September 1st. And they even put two photos, the photo of the tree as it looks now and the photo from 1915 when the tree was 10 years old. So that was cool. And I actually had a handful of people say, you know, write notes or make comments to me. Hey, we want to be involved in the Tree of the Year nominations. When do they start, you know, for 2021? And so that's just a handful, but that's a start. Number three, my next Tree of the Year article is about the 1989 Tree of the Year, which is the Tree of Heaven that has been mentioned a couple times, was planted sometime in the 1800s removed or cut down in 2006 due to disease. And I'm going to be talking with a few people. If any of you on the Tree Commission have knowledge about that tree, please reach out to me. So I'll be working on that over the next couple of weeks. Or if you even want to share anything about if you have personal experience working with Tree of Heaven, which I understand is a horrible invasive species, then please share any personal experiences you have with me. And do you guys, I think you should have you can just go to walkashland.com to get in touch with me. And finally, this is something I just wanted to bring up for people to think about. As I was going around taking photos of almost every Tree of the Year now during the past year, I noticed the number of them do not have their signs, whether there was never one put up or property owner removed it or vandalism or, you know, whatever reasons. That bothers me. And I know that, yes, Aaron.
If I could speak to that, even the small plaques can cost $150 to $200. And in most recent years, since I've been here, we have not done plaques. And I know there are many, many trees that don't have plaques. And sadly, it's a budgetary thing.
Yeah. Okay. That is, I understand from my experience with the public artworks that, you know, plaques are very expensive. But I think we could come up with a creative way to spend maybe $10 or $15 for something that will be on the tree that will be reasonably informational and stay there for a few years. So I just ask you to think about it, and I'll think about it and maybe come up with a suggestion for the next meeting or a couple meetings from now. So yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. That was enjoyed the article. There's a little table made of that Tree of Ailanthus, or Tree of Heaven rather, at the planning department. It's a little fun fact.
Yeah, I thought it was removed to make room for the library expansion.
That was right at the entrance to Lithia Park.
I thought that's the ginkgo that you're talking about, Asa.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're still there, Peter, you might want to hang out. There's a big presentation on Tree of Heaven and some of the issues that come up. It'll be real education on that tonight. So if you're still there, hang out.
Okay, well, let's dispense with the one tree removal permit, which I have to recuse myself of. So I was going to take the gavel.
So I'll go ahead and have you go to the lobby here and... And whoever's going to go ahead and that was Asa, my bad. Okay, so the one remark I would have about this application is this is a street tree permit, which is ministerial and not a type one land use action. So we don't actually need to go through the entire script. In fact, ministerial permits are such that these can be done in the past. They were often done without coming to the tree commission, but there was a controversial one. And so we bring them to you for your review, regardless of that. In this particular case, the applicant is Canopy. It is 374 Hellman. There's a photo of it in your packet. It is a dead maple tree. As we've talked about before, dead street trees do require permits because they are in the right of way, and the city wants to review that process. So that's about all I have to say about the application. Chris is the applicant, and he's recused. So we're just going to assume he's not going to speak on the application's behalf.
Do we need to have extended discussion about it? Or if it's pretty clear that it's a dead tree, we can just vote to approve?
Yeah, I mean, as you'll recall, we dispatched with that street tree removal at the last meeting without a great deal of discussion. There does not need to be extensive deliberation. It's a dead tree.
Does anyone want deliberation? I don't think so. Anyone want to make a motion to approve? Hard to hear you, Asa. There's a bit.
Do we need to mitigate with a replanting of another tree?
Yeah, that should be a condition of approval. Absolutely.
I make a motion to approve the removal of the tree with a mitigating species replanted. And the appropriate irrigation. Did you second, Asa?
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor? I guess I'm chairing this. Sorry.
Aye.
It's okay.
You got to be careful with me. I'll just be president before you know it.
You did great.
There we go. We're done. Business done.
Business done. Something to think on too. You know, sometimes it seems like a matter of course to sign off on the dead tree, but things like taxodiums or dawn redwoods, you know, I've seen people claim they're dead. They are not. Anyway, okay. So, and I think, Aaron, I'll send us some extra material from Risa. I think you guys had a chance to review that.
Yeah, and before we get started on that, I was going to ask you, Chris, it sounds like we're probably going to have a pretty running dialogue here. Do you want me to invite Amy, Christina, and Risa in as panelists?
Yeah, so let's do that. And I would open it up to them, you know, presenting like it was a planning action and kind of give us some background and, you know, what their concerns are. And they spell it out well in that letter. But yes, I would.
Is it possible that we could just have like a 2-minute discussion about that tree trimming before the Tree of Heaven thing? Because the Tree of Heaven thing may go beyond when I'm having to head out.
Sure. Yeah, no. And what, and I'm sorry, what was that in regards to?
It was a citizen that came to me, and they're really, it's included in the packet. It was a tree trimming that was on, I haven't got the address here, on B Street, I think. And that he's an arborist himself, and he was just completely appalled at the job that was done. And I asked him to send a photo just so that we could have a look. And if there's anything that you as arborists would have to say. I'm no expert, and I don't know what they were dealing with when they came upon this tree. So just as having a look at the tree after the fact, it's pretty bad. It's on the final page of our packet there. It looks to me like the tree is going to end up just splitting right down the middle. And I don't know what else they could have done, but if you guys have input about that, I can get back to the community member.
Yeah, ultimately.
That's the city power company.
Yeah, those guys have a mandate. They just have to clear the lines. And it's probably been done to that extent in the past. And it's hard to watch because they've been hitting it pretty hard lately. I will say that as power line guys, the local Ashland guys do really well. They make a lot of proper pruning cuts. They have to make hard decisions on clearing the line versus, you know, the aesthetics of the tree. And it's tough spot they're in. And they're trying to kind of maximize every trip. I think they have the parameters are they need to see it clear for at least 3 years, I think, is their hope. And so they prune to that extent, which, can be rather hard sometimes. Can be a lot worse.
Okay. I will pass that along to the community member. Thanks. I just wanted to make sure he felt like we'd seen it and we were keeping an eye on that. And I said, feel free to forward any examples that you think are egregious to us, and we'll.
My experience has been for power companies, especially, they're the most communicative, they're very courteous. They honestly do, for what they have to do, they do a very good job.
Did a nice job on the walnut on the corner of my street, which I was happy about. So, okay, thank you.
Anybody else have any input on that? I mean, to jump in on that, Asa or Peter too, and Eric. Yeah,
I'm good.
Okay. Tree from not so heaven.
Hey Chris, just real quick, can you guys hear me?
You're really spotty. Yeah, that's a little better, but say something again.
Okay. Yeah, so the power's out here, so I'm using a neighbor's Wi-Fi, so that's probably why it's a little bit less, but you should be able to hear me because I'm connected via the phone too.
Yeah, I hear a lot better now. You do a little Nemo thing every once in a while from Matrix, but other than that, you're mostly good.
Okay.
Yeah, good to hear you. Okay, well, yeah, welcome, Risa.
Good evening, tree commissioners. And we are really pleased and appreciative to have this opportunity to kind of put our heads together and be part of the solution of the Tree of Heaven opportunities that it has offered us. And Christina and Amy, hopefully Amy looks like she's intending to be here, but the three of us have kind of come together around this issue and have a little bit different perspectives. And I'm wondering, Aaron, if you could share kind of that agenda that we sent to you. And then I would just ask you all if it would be helpful to have you had an opportunity to look at the photos or look at what it is that we're talking about? Because at the moment, it's much less about the trees, because it was trees that created the issue, but there are no longer trees. I don't know if it's helpful. I don't want to like bore you, but want you to have the relevant information so that we can jump into creating a path forward so that the next people that find themselves in this situation won't be starting from scratch and hopefully will be making much better choices than what occurred to creating the situation, the challenge that I'm currently in, and Christina has her own tree of heaven, hell, that's different, but nevertheless, we would like to use this format. So I just need a little guidance from you all, what you need, what you want, so that we can jump forward.
Well, Risa, I shared your document to all of the Tree Commission when you sent it in. I don't think sharing it would be very helpful based on the fact that it takes away the video feeds for everyone else. But if there's something in particular you want to bring up briefly, I'm more than happy to do that.
Well, actually, that first page would be helpful for me because it was sort of like our agenda and the resources that we've come up with, a meeting that Christina and I attended. It would be kind of a guiding light for us. And I was heartened by reading the mission of the Tree Commission because it informed me that reaching out to you all to help to come up with a plan with a best practices is really the way to go. And we really, you know, Christina and I in our conversations see the solution as a collaborative one. It isn't like being dumped on the Ashland Tree Commission because, you know, part of what we learned from the CWMA, which maybe Christina would remind me what it stands for. It's a group of professionals in Jackson and Josephine County that deals with invasive species, with weeds and that sort of thing. And there were two or three people on that committee that said, you know, we want to be a part of the solution too. I'm hoping that you all had the opportunity to look at the photo album. It's, you know, on the ground over the course of a year plus next door. Unfortunately, I wasn't on a focused path when those trees came down. Had I been, I, you know, would have taken a photo of them. But one of the things that I feel we need to amend with the way that the city deals with the permitting process is that if 822 Oak Street had obtained a permit to cut down the 19 trees, that wouldn't have solved our problem. Because the problem is that had they come to the city, requested a permit, it really isn't anywhere that informs the homeowner what the tree is they're cutting down, the people who are the tree service that's cutting the trees down. The people that cut the tree down, I don't know if they knew it was a tree of heaven or not, but they did absolutely the worst possible things to it. Because I've learned what you do. And what you do when you have a stand of trees of heaven, unfortunately, herbicides are your ticket. And I'm really not a big fan of them. But in this case, it's completely appropriate. And a month before you want to cut the trees down, you apply, you apply the appropriate herbicide, you wait a month, you return, you cut the tree down a month later, you drill holes in it, and you inject it with more herbicide. One of the incredible things about this tree is that it's all about the underground. You know, a lot of us are learning from tree people about that. And the tree of heaven is a perfect example of the most of the activity happens underground. So I can look next door and I can see that the foliage of the trees that they have sprayed, the sprouts that they have sprayed are dead. But in the world of Ailanthus, tree of heaven, it doesn't mean that underground where the root system is moving like wildfire, well, that's a little a misspeak. It's moving really fast. That method is not going to take care of the problem. And I'm going to just pause for a minute and ask Christina if she wants to jump in, because this is, you know, this is our thing. Plus, Amy has, you know, a unique perspective as being a former city planner and is working with the owner of 822 and has some really good ideas for changes that we can make in the way that the city currently functions with dealing with invasive species. So.
I just want to commend Risa for her commitment to this issue. I hope this is an unusual situation that we're dealing with 19 of these ailanthus that were cut down all at once. And what it does, if you have not looked at our photo album, I really want you to look at that because it is unbelievable. I just happened to be at Risa's house in August of 2020. She showed me what was happening across the fence. I said, wow. So I took a little video thinking this might come in handy one day. And it does, because there is now a video in there of August 2021, and it's, I'm not supposed to cuss on video. So it's quite enlightening, and the problem is that it's expanding. So this is a perfect example of what not to do and what can happen. These trees will make it down the hill. There's a picture in there that shows you the fence between private property and park property, and it's just going to walk it down the hill because there's going to be more water down the hill. It's incredibly mind-boggling. And so what we're doing is bringing this to you, as Risa said, we're not saying, okay, Tree Commission, fix this. We're wanting you to know this. All of you are tree people. I'm sure you know how bad this tree is, but have any of you seen 19 of them cut down at once? And this is a pervasive problem throughout the country. This tree should not be here. I think it's extremely ironic that we also have Mr. Finkel on the call today mentioning that tree of the year is actually a tree of heaven. So this is something that most people don't know. It looks like a walnut. People don't think about the tree is there. The tree stinks. You can easily identify an Ailanthus altissima because of the way it stinks. I mean, it's like rancid peanut butter. It really stinks. And Risa mentioned my situation. Mine is nothing compared to hers. Nothing. We cut down a tree in Phoenix on our property. I asked the city of Phoenix for help. They said, please cut it down. I asked them for help. They said, no, it's your problem. So we have little sprouts, we're pulling them, you know, it's one tree. But I can walk around Phoenix, I can drive around Phoenix, I can see the burned areas in Phoenix, and there are ailanthus coming up everywhere. We, one of my volunteers, we went over across the street, across 4th Street, I probably shouldn't say this, it was private property, and we cut down a tree right there up against the building. So how can we do something? The way you do it is educate. You do anything that there's a problem, you educate. And so how can the Tree Commission of Ashland help us get the word out to the community in a very inexpensive way? Because I understand budgetary issues, and I want to thank Councillor Jensen for sharing all that with us. So like Risa said, I think we're coming to you, you know, to make sure you do know about this problem, because if Risa wasn't bringing this to you, I'm going to assume you will not know about it. And I'm sure we do not want this repeated in other places in Ashland or in other places in Jackson and Josephine County. The CWMA, the Cooperative Weed Management Area, if you don't know, there are multiples around the country. There's also the Soil and Water Conservation District. If you scan down, there's some other websites, and other counties are doing a really nice job of putting out invasive weed information to the public, really pretty and so forth. And so I think what we're doing is just asking you to look at this situation as a textbook, what do not do, and then see how we can help spread the word to our citizens to protect the city of Ashland and beyond. Thank you.
Yes, Councillor Jensen.
Could we? Oh, good. I was going to say lose the share screen. Aaron, can you weigh in on this from a planning perspective in terms of is there any precedent for other obnoxious or noxious plants that are interdicted? Preemptively interdicted by the planning department or the code?
There's a section of the code that deals with noxious and invasive weeds. It's not a section of the code that I deal with very frequently because that's really more of a code enforcement standpoint. So I really can't speak much to that section of the code. But there's nothing in the land use ordinance, chapter 18, that deals with invasives specifically so far, with exception of the exemption that allows you to remove them from riparian areas. That's a place where it's mentioned in the code. But there's nothing about mitigation like what we're discussing here this evening.
Thank you. It seems to me, just weigh in here real quick, that I don't know that anybody needs to be convinced of this problem. You know, you go on the web and just look it up, and that's the very first thing any perspective, Wikipedia and all the tree people, they say right off the bat exactly what Reese is talking about. It's a bad, bad situation. And it seems like a good place for, some kind of more than just education. I know we want to avoid the heavy hand of government and so on, but this certainly seems like we could explore what it would take to interdict this on the front end of these projects and have that removal done in the proper way. As has been suggested.
Does it fall under the purview at all of, I'm just saying that Brian Hendricks, the weed abatement coordinator at the fire department? Marisa, have you spoken with him?
Yes, multiple times. Mm-hmm. And he, he came out, after the trees were cut, and then they just, last year, they just exploded, and it was a fire risk. And so it was the fire risk that got the city's attention. And so for that, that was helpful.
But it's attacking the problem from the wrong end too.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And Amy is here. I'm happy to see her. And I think that she would be able to offer some guidance in the planning world and how we might make entryways into dealing with this in the future with existing and possibly modifications to code. I don't speak that language, but Amy, could you?
Sure. Hello, everyone. So the ailanthus tree is listed in the recommended street tree guide just as a non-recommended tree. And then it says if you do use it, a male tree should be chosen, which I think the case is they really shouldn't be used at all, especially not as street trees. They're probably similar to, what's the other one with the spiky balls, liquid ambar trees. They destroy the sidewalk, and then ailanthus is actually a bad thing in the end because it destroys everything. It's like a sumac. So thankfully, don't run into them on many projects in town. What makes it interesting about 822 Oak is that when they build the houses on those properties, they will be taking out, some of the soil. But we don't know if that's even really going to eliminate the problem or just re-spark it. because it seems like it's once you disturb the root zones, you actually send out more baby trees. So that property owner and Risa have been in communication quite a bit. And I'm not here to deal with like that specific property in particular. It's more about just the tree of heaven. And I think, you know, there was those calorie pear street trees. And in the research I'd been doing, we shouldn't have street trees that can cross-pollinate with actual valley fruit producing economic trees. You know, the Myers orchard just cut down a bunch of trees, which is really sad, but we do still have a pear orchard here. So we should probably try to move away from any tree that can cross-pollinate or trees like this that should be prohibited. And I think the educational piece that I can catch my clients on the front end, but I only have a handful of people. And most tree removals, as you guys are aware, happen before I arrive on the scene, often happen before people go into the city offices, you know, and then so it's not something necessarily that I think that I could even have much of an impact on people that I work with. It does have to be more of like a community outreach through the mailer that the city does and the utility bills through, you know, just through, I think what Peter Finkel's talking about, you know, that tree, Don Tote, would be a great resource if Don's still around, because Don worked for the Parks Department for years and he limped that ailanthus tree along. It was all cabled together and just to make it survive. And that tree, in talking to Don over the years, if you look back at the discussion of that tree removal, Don was talking about how he felt guilty eventually because fought so hard to preserve this tree that then you go down to the Rogue River and you see ailanthus trees where they should never have been. And because it spreads all over the place and it spreads down river, it's kind of like a, you know, a butterfly bush, it spreads out. So, I think that it's a major educational thing. And then the removal piece, that's going to be a delicate dance in Ashland, a town of anti chemicals. Like the only option is crossbow. I mean, that's like, that's going to make people kind of freak out. So I know that I've learned a lot just researching this tree, knowing what I know about that previous ailanthus tree that is a table in the lobby, that I think there's things that can be done to the recommended street tree guide to clean it up and make it a better document by making more firm language about these trees shouldn't be allowed and here's how we remove those trees. So maybe some updates to that document would be a good way to go to get the message out.
Great, thank you. Yes, Christina.
Thank you, Amy, for those comments. But you know, I think education is, there's multiple ways, and just even photos, not saying where these are happening, but just, you know, using some of the photos in our album, maybe Mr. Finkel could talk about this particular problem. There's many ways. I mean, you have the city, the tree commission, you have ways of getting this out. And so, and you have publicity people that know how to put these packages together. So getting something out again, that's cheap. I mean, we're not asking for a big billboard or anything, but just ways to get this information out into people's hands. And then they go, oh, I've seen that. Well, let me go take care of this little sprout so it doesn't take over my yard and take out my house. And then I would really encourage us working with other cities and other agencies that have even more reach and more resources to put some things together. And so it's like the city of Ashland can start something here because we have this huge example, but then be a sponsor to other things with other organizations to really do something. I mean, maybe there's going to be a conference about ailanthus altissima. I'm joking. Thank you.
Risa?
What occurs to me is that the problem in dealing with the ailanthus is going to be the same in Ashland and Phoenix and Talent and Timbuktu. And so in that way, that's the place to partner with and it expend our energies in creating a body of information and tools for, say, Jackson and Josephine County with the CWMA as an example. But then there are particular things that have just to do with the city of Ashland, just to do with each of the municipalities. And so I think what we're talking about has two parts. If that just kind of came to me while, you know, listening to y'all in terms of looking at a solution, because Ashland doesn't need to solve this in a bubble, but it does need to embrace it and figure out a path forward for the rules that govern how the city functions, because each city is going to be a little different.
And may I just add to that? This, you know, we're coming to you because you're the tree commission, but like I know Chris, and so there's tree companies out there. So if there was even just a little flyer, one little piece of paper, you know, it could be three flyers out of one sheet of paper. And when a tree company goes to a house for any reason, they say, would you please read this flyer and please share it with your neighbor? And then you have landscapers. So there are ways to get this out into the community, and it's sanctioned by the city of Ashland. It's not sanctioned by Risa Buck, whoever heard of her, right? So, you know, we need to have this coming from a body that has some weight. And so we can deal with it that way. But then, like Risa's saying, we also need to get with the other agencies that can help on a broader scale. You know, I don't know, maybe somebody wants to do an interview with a local television station or something. Anyway, I'm just encouraging us to think about ways. And the other thing I wanted to say is this is not like the most crucial issue in the world. The budget right now is major. I realize that. And there are major, many, many others. But if we don't bring this to now and we wait till another year, well, I don't know what. So we just had to come today.
Yes, sir.
You know, one thought that just comes to mind, and we haven't had this happen too often, but it trips us up when it does, is that if someone came to us and said, I want to remove a tree of heaven, and they are not able to make a finding that it's – Amy's nodding her head. She knows exactly where I'm going with this. That if it's not making – if it's not posing a hazard and it's not being proposed for removal to enable some sort of other development, it makes it very hard to make findings that tree removal meets with a straight face the tree removal that is not a hazard criteria. So – you know, to ultimately fix this would probably would require some tweaks to the land use ordinance. And if the tree commission chooses to do that, that's going to be a lengthy process. And we would need to talk with my supervisors about staff resources available to do it. But that's something that we might want to discuss.
And I think, too, I would argue that ailanthus is not always inherently evil, a nice big shade tree ailanthus, that the issue is once you cut them down, it just really ticks them off, and that's when they explode. I've seen them growing through pavement, you know, and I, yeah, my brain's honed, and you know, and a lot of these guys that do tree work, you know, would see that in a yard and immediately get that thing out of there. You know, and in our end too, I think, yeah, if we can focus on education, and if we see it then as a planning action, say, hey, you know, these are recommended practices if you're going to remove that tree. Again, that's just kind of relying on word of mouth, which would only go so far. So I hear what you're saying about a way to replicate that and kind of spread the word a little more systematically. And I hear, too, exactly what Amy's saying. We're recommending herbicides, which a lot of us aren't big fans of. And even as a tree company, it's a separate license to apply herbicides. And I let that lapse because I just don't like this stuff. But there are other companies that would do that, that specialize in it. And then, yeah, being recommending it from the city. I know, because Parks and Rec, you guys don't do herbicides at all anymore, do you, Peter?
Just there's just a couple of specific places that are that it's allowed, the ball field, dirt areas, and on the north entry. But yeah, otherwise, it's completely not used.
And digging,
right?
And it's—I mean, this stuff is classed with blackberries and gorse, and then all the other nasties that, like you say, you reach out to the Soil and Water Conservation District. That's a good one. And people see a tree, and that's a little different than looking at a bush, a gorse bush, or broom, or certainly blackberries. But it, yeah, should be classed as the same. It is classed as the same. Interestingly enough, also used to be the most popular street tree in New York City around the turn of the century until they figured out how awful it is. But, Risa, do you have a comment?
Just about the reluctance to use herbicides, which I have to say, you know, I've lived on this property for 30 years. And ironically, the day that I met Christina was the day that the bee pollinator people were coming on my property to grant me that privilege to have that bee pollinator sign. And here I am on the verge of applying, you know, this, that was funny in a sad sort of way. But I wanted to, in my research yesterday online about natural ways to eradicate Tree of Heaven, I saw a thing and it's also on the resource. These guys were using mushroom plugs and systematically inserting them into the tree going around it. Whether or not it works, I have no idea. But one day.
Eric, as a landscaper and doing installations and things, do you find, is it effective to pull out, rip it out? It's honestly, it's pretty rare that we do run into it, you know, just a handful of times. But have you really done any other cases?
I just want to take the fifth on what landscapers do. I've seen a lot of things, and I don't want to say, you know, in what happens in Ashland. I don't want to get attacked.
I guess I'm wondering too, and Amy can speak to this. So in this case, in a development, you know, how much soil root volume has to be removed to eradicate? I imagine a lot.
And where are you going to take it?
Exactly.
You know, what are you going to do with it? You know, take another problem here and then set it over here. You know, it's kind of what humans seem to do.
yeah.
You know, well, we don't have it anymore, so it's okay. You know, I think in this case, you pretty well have to, you know, deal with herbicides carefully.
Yeah.
But, and people do have licenses for that, you know, and if you go through a licensed person to do it, then it's legal and it's safe. So until that starts to happen, you're going to have Tree of Heaven growing up whenever people chop them down. So
research.
Education, I guess.
Yeah.
So Eric, you just reminded me of one of the things that happened when these guys cut all the trees down. I was there and I was like, oh, you know, I was kind of freaked out about it. I was worried about the erosion impacts on the lower part of my property. And I felt bad that they were cutting all these trees. And I was like, I just like to reuse things as much as possible. So I stupidly said to these guys, leave the big trunks. And so I have these massive trunks of ailanthus holding up the bank, ha ha. And I'm not proud, but I am ignorant, not anymore, but I had these guys dump wood chips from the ailanthus in my yard, and I spread it. And that's because I didn't know. And so these are the kinds of details that the next person, they can make a bad choice, but let's give them the information. I mean, who is going to, I mean, so one of the requirements of removing ailanthus is that you have to take every speck of that tree and you have to put it in the landfill, which, you know, is against my religion. But in this case, herbicides and landfilling is what you need to do.
I wonder if I
don't know. It has to be a lot more has to be involved than just the few of us sitting around talking about this. I mean, this is a start, but
yeah,
I mean, it's a big issue. It's a big issue.
It's a big issue. And I don't wonder if, I mean, at its simplest, you know, there are informational pamphlets at the city planning office, right, Aaron? And you go in, you get info on this, that, and the other thing, as well as tree care, tree planting, and tree ordinances. I don't know. And it feels like a drop in the bucket, but even if you were to prepare something that we could present and set out, and at least that gives us something, we could make a motion to vote on something like that if you were to present it to us. Or Stephen?
I think we can use as an example Christina's work with pollinators and Bee City and so on and so on. There was nothing mandated there, but it was a splendid educational effort across this community. And look how look what great inroads that has made. And I think the educational piece. I think there's lots of opportunities for education. Whether it be upgrading or putting a footnote into the tree, the recommended street trees, like Amy talked about, I think in City Source, just, oh, by the way, people are interested in reading something like that. No, it could be written kind of cute, and Risa, you'd be the perfect person to write something like that up, and some mitigations and some, and so on. But I think it's education, education, education. The land use process, changing the land use, saying, boy, that's a heavy lift in this day and age. And I just don't see that. I don't see staff having time. It's going to involve legal. It's going to involve planning. It's going to involve city council. It's going to involve planning commission. You know, and that whole process, public hearing, blah, 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 blah. Probably be 2 years before something like that gets in place. But anyway, I think education, education, education. I think people in this town would be receptive to it. I don't see anybody fighting that.
No,
it's so overwhelming, you know.
I think, and if you have somebody spearheading it, Risa, I mean, that it's just going to take somebody doing it and running with it. And I think you'd have a full-throated support from us. Asa, did you have your hand up? No.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. So as far as the education thing, you know, I mean, I think if someone's coming to remove an ailanthus, you know, we could surely say, hey, by the way, do some research on, you know, what's to come. And when the ailanthus gets cuts down, it's not like the roots just magically walk and then pop up. They're already there. And it's a stress response that basically they say, ouch, I'm here, I'm going to grow a new trunk. So they're already there when they decide to sprout. There's multiple trees that do the same thing, including cottonwoods, plums, willows, and that we've had people bring it up as an issue.
We got most of that, AC. We started breaking up a little bit at the end, but talking about other trees that sprout from roots, willows you mentioned, and
yeah, cottonwoods and plums. Mm-hmm.
Populus. Yeah. It's a good Latin name for that.
Christina, yeah.
I have two comments. One, if Ace is through, I wanted to respond to something there. And then going back to the previous conversation just a second ago, there's also developers, which I guess is sort of the real reason why we're here today, is because the one property was going to be developed. And that's why the trees were cut down. And I don't know any developers, but I don't know what kind of information they need to have and or want to know about what they're cutting down. And when one could go off on another discussion about all the trees that are being cut down to develop houses, but we won't do that today. So I think that's another hugely key piece, that if someone is cutting a tree because they're going to build a house and they've gotten a permit to do that, then, you know, this is all intertwined, all of all the roots, so that we can make sure that everybody is educated about the situation. So anyway, and then regarding Ace's comment, I think you're extremely on point. And I think that the root sprouting is a problem, but I don't think it has those trees. They don't have the toxicity that the tree of heaven has, that, you know, they, tree of heaven will actually keep other plants from growing. And then the other thing I just want to bring up. All right. Can y'all hear me? All of a sudden I'm getting feedback. The other thing that's really I like about those trees is that all of them are very important host plants for butterflies and moths. So having lots of cottonwoods and willows is actually a really good thing, except that people are here. So people don't necessarily want those. But if we had lots more willows and lots more cottonwoods, I forget the other tree you mentioned, plums, the butterflies and moths would be a lot happier. And the birds would then also be happier.
And I think that this discussion at the planning stage that you mentioned, Christine, in your first point, is low-hanging fruit that we can do just as a conversation and being more aware of that and saying, and we can make recommendations that before you remove this tree, before you build your house, you should treat it without having to do the ordinance change, which just truthfully won't happen. But and that's the start, right? You just have educated us in that, and that's a great first start. Is there, I just want to, I don't want to, I guess, let this conversation die. If there's something more concrete, we can do it as a follow-up, as well as probably time to start wrapping it up. But Risa, yes?
Well, on that note, Chris, as far as next steps, I'm not the person to lead it. I have an overflowing plate with commitments that I already have. I mean, I am 100% into solving the issue that's happening in my yard right now, but I also have a concern for the future, and I am very willing to be a part of a committee that comes together to put some of these ideas, outreach, education, resources, but you know, I've got my tree of heaven, hell, right here at home, and I'm happy to use, you know, my experience to build resources and work, you know, in our county and maybe even Josephine County for a solution. But I'd like to be part of the solution. I'm not the solution. And I was hoping today to get, you know, a little direction from the tree commission, in terms of any interest that, the commission has to, move forward with help from others.
Yes, Christina.
Well, since Risa was asking that, is it possible that the tree commission can create a sub commission, if you will, ad hoc? I don't know what your protocols are, ad hoc or ongoing, to deal with this, and then actually put out a request to the community. I'm thinking of past tree commissioners who might want to dabble in tree policy issues again, and maybe one or two community members, and that way Risa's part of this the solution part rather than actually leading it. And so would that be a way to, because I don't want this to just drop into the records and, you know, well, that was a nice conversation. I also can't lead it. I've got way too much on my plate. I can help. But I think, you know, tying it back into the natives, is a really good connection. I'm not necessarily advocating that we cut down every tree of heaven that there is because of this problem, but I wish we could. I wish we could replace every tree of heaven and every other non-native, for the most part, you know, with more of the natives. But I think just having some sort of body that can maybe focus on it with experts. Reese and I are just community members. So which is a good thing, Risa. Which is a good thing, Risa.
I got to beg the full plate thing too, I'm afraid, as well as yeah, just a lot of priorities in life and as a community. I think our heart's all in it. It comes down to, yeah, honestly, time and short supply.
But I think this is the start.
It is.
It's not getting away. I didn't realize it was such a problem before tonight.
No, I think it is. I think you've done a great service by being here and even just sharing this message with us, because that's going to multiply. I mean, many of us are going house to house on a daily basis doing landscaping and trees and parks and planning and development. But
We're going to be thinking about this, and we're going to be thinking about ways, to do this. Isn't going to be dropped. Just, it's not going to be the last conversation, at least not for me. It's not. But to come up with something just tonight on like this is that's virtually impossible, but it started, the ball's rolling right now. It's starting to roll. It's rolling. You guys started this. I think it's awesome.
He's just trying to talk to us.
There's something about the ISA, the International Society of Arboriculture, correct? You think they may have some materials ready to go on it? Just educational, worth a look.
Well, if I could just say, and Kat Gould isn't here to weigh in.
Go ahead, Risa.
But maybe someone, at your next tree commission meeting, you could possibly review this with Kat included. And if you decide to come up with some kind of a subcommittee to look at this and partner with other members of the community, it sounds like Christina's in and I'm in. I can't speak for Amy, but I haven't taken my armor off because I am battling this beast, and we'll see who wins. If you all have any kind of curiosity, you're more than welcome to contact me, and you can see for yourself. Just for your own. If you want just someone to laugh at, I'm always available. But
I will say that when Risa was exaggeratingly telling me how bad this was, I'm thinking, okay, well, that's probably pretty bad, but I'll go look. I was horrified. So you can go see it for yourself.
I've seen the entire hillsides and banks of creeks and, the whole country too. You go back to the Midwest or the East Coast, it's everywhere.
And if I'm unsuccessful on my eastern slope, it is going to be a problem for Ashland Parks in the next 2 years. I think that's how long it will take for the roots to make it, Tree of Heaven is like viruses. There are no boundaries. There are no borders. It's just survival. Yep. But I really appreciate the opportunity to just share with y'all and, talk about this, and we'll be available to be a part of the solution if, you decide a direction.
Awesome. Well, I think, we should add it to the agenda as a follow-up discussion item, guys, and think on it. And
thank you all very much. I really want to say appreciate your time. This went for a long time. I thought it was great.
It was wonderful. We usually have a full docket of planning actions to review, so it was great to give you guys the floor. We're passionate about this stuff, too. And I think, Asa, did I address what you said? I think we should follow up, put it on the agenda next time. Is that what you're writing there? Okay.
And we'll be here. Hopefully the Tree of Heaven is going elsewhere, but Christine and I hopefully will remain.
All right. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. And thank you all for the work that you're doing for our city.
Okay. Is there anything else, Aaron?
The only other item on the agenda is adjournment.
Any other comments, last parting thoughts? In that case, 7:26, call the meeting adjourned.
Good to see you all. We'll see you next month.
Bye, great. Thanks.